I want you to remember or imagine a time when someone precious to you had recently died. In our present age, this is becoming all too common. A couple of weeks later, you find yourself at a social gathering and you're determined not to talk about your loss. Instead, you resolve as much as possible to participate in the group conversations. However, it is difficult. It is difficult for you to keep the conversations in focus. One person is talking about a teenage daughter who hasn't cleaned a room in weeks, wondering if she's ever going to be responsible. Another group is discussing the failure of the government to solve a myriad of problems facing the country. And eventually, there's going to be a discussion on sports, especially among the men, be it soccer, World Cup, basketball, free agency, especially here in the United States, or even cricket. Another might be talking about sales going on at the grocery stores or the department stores. Another day or another time, you may join in these conversations, but not this time. Instead, you keep seeing the face of the person who has just died. And you find yourself a little annoyed at the small concerns that loom so large in the conversations of your friends or your acquaintances. And you ask yourself, how could any of this possibly matter? How could they possibly think that it really matters? Does it? Does it matter really? Another circumstance. You're plagued by worries. The day after you finish paying for your automobile, you get a fender bender. And who knows how much it's going to cost you out of pocket. Or your son's grades at college aren't getting any better. They're actually getting worse. And it's hard to convince him that D's are going to be more expensive for him down the line than A's because of a lack of effort at this time. And because of that lack of effort, he's going to have to put forth more effort in the future. Or maybe you started a to-do list for tomorrow. And you're already on page 2. Or your boss asked to see you first thing in the morning. And he's never done that before. You go to bed and you start tossing and turning and turning and tossing, wrestling over these worries. And it's a match you're losing as sleep has a tendency to elude you. And you finally doze off to sleep. And shortly thereafter, the phone rings. And there's something ominous about a phone ringing in the middle of the night. On the other end is a familiar voice, obviously shaken, telling you that a loved one just recently died. And in that instant, whatever you were worrying about flies into the night and disappears, for they no longer matter. You see, death is a teacher. Death is a teacher. It never says a word, but it teaches us many things. When death intrudes our daily routine, it can add instant perspective to our lives. It helps us to realize what is truly important and what is not. Those smaller concerns of life that so often crowd our minds and hearts can simply fly away in the presence of death. And it is then that we're prepared to see with crystal clarity what it is that should be occupying our time and attention. Death is a teacher. And that's what I want to deal with today. Death teaches us that this physical life is transitory. First thing. This physical life is transitory. James chapter 4, verses 13 to 14. James 4, 13 to 14. Death is the natural consequence to life. All living things die. We may not like it, we may not want it, but it happens. Death is the natural consequence. James chapter 4, verses 13 and 14. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, make a profit, live life. Carry on routinely. But then verse 14, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. You don't. And so often we have that attitude. Even with someone that might be lying up in the ICU unit of a hospital, and we have this communication with them, oh, don't worry, you're going to get better. You don't know. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And as James goes on, he says, what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Good News Bible says, like a puff of smoke. Like a puff of smoke. I remember years ago when I was going to the Purdue University Extension in Indianapolis, Indiana, living on the south side of Indianapolis, and the extension was on the north side of Indianapolis, and it was the winter time and I had to catch a bus. And it was a very cold morning. The wind chill had the temperature down to minus 40 degrees, 40 below zero. And I remember standing there as we were waiting for the bus, that even the tears coming down my eyes, from my eyes, were freezing on my face. They could not make it down my cheek. And I decided to just blow out that air that came in through my nostrils. And it didn't go that far. It just kind of vanished away. This is what it's saying. How quickly this life comes to an end. Because all living things die. In the Bhagavad Gita of the Hindus, the question is asked, quote, of all the world's wonders, which is the most wonderful? The Gita says, quote, that each man, though he sees others dying all around him, never believes that he himself will die. I might add that many of us don't want to think about the fact that we will die until we reach a certain state or stage in life, such as a sickness and or old age. You know, as we talk about this, and you might get involved in conversations with some people who may be over 40, 50, 60, and we talk about the aches and pains that we go through, I just wonder if this is not by God's design. Because this physical life does decay. And as it decays, we are moving to an inevitability. We all will die. Back to Psalm 90. Psalm 90, we covered this a couple of years ago. Psalm by Moses. Psalm 90, the beginning of the psalm, he contrasts the eternity of God with the mortality of man. God occupies eternity. We are physical. We will die. And in Psalm 90, verse 4, 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it is past, and like a watch in the night. God doesn't look at time like we do. 1,000 years to God is like a day, even less than that. And if you look at the second comparison of the watch in the night. He says, verse 5, you carry them away like a flood. They are all like sleep. In the morning, they're like grass, which grows up. In the morning, it flourishes and it grows up. The evening, it is cut down and it withers. One of the lessons, as I look back over my tenure in the ministry, in the various places that I have been, Without a doubt, one of the lessons I have learned from being in Chicago for 8 years is that life is transitory. Being involved in so many funerals, oldest being 96, youngest being 10 and a half months. And it was a little bit surreal that this past Tuesday, as we buried Sheila Burnett, we buried her in the same cemetery where her grandson was buried over 30 years before. And we went to that cemetery some 30 plus years ago. I don't recall seeing so many gravestones out at that cemetery. But this time it was populating the ground. So many there in the cemetery. Because this life is transitory. And we die. I recall one of those early morning phone calls. When we were living in Maryland, they could not get a hold of the minister in Philadelphia. So here I am down in the Baltimore area. They called me 3-4 o'clock in the morning. I need you. I need you to come up here and anoint my son. He's 3 years old. I brought him from Florida to see his father. And he complained about a headache, and he now has lapsed into unconsciousness and is in a coma in the hospital. Please, please come. I got up there, the rush hour, about 100 miles away, made it to the hospital, met the mother as well as the father. They had been separated and went in to see the little boy, 3 years old. Hooked up to all the monitors. And in looking at the monitor, there is no brain activity. Very, very difficult circumstance for both mother and father. And I remember when the doctors got the parents in the room to give them the sad news. Their son is brain dead. And in a circumstance like that, they want to know, are you interested in donating your son's organs? Again, not an easy thing. And I remember after the doctors had left and the mother had left, I was in the room alone with the father, and he was bawling like a baby. And he wanted me to pray at that time, let's go down on our knees and ask for God's mercy to let little Jonathan come back to life again, please. But Jonathan died. Because that's what happened to us all. There's a time to be born. And there's a time to die. And as we come into this life, you know my example. When we're born, that clock of life is ticking down inevitably to death. And we all die. There was an epitaph on a headstone in a cemetery in Indiana from the 19th century, 1800s. The headstone read this way. Pause, stranger, when you pass me by. As you are now, so once was I. As I am now, so you will be. So prepare for death and follow me. I mean, it's an insightful poem indeed. But you know, there are tendencies of individuals who want to deny it or even make fun of it. Someone unfortunately added to the inscription and said, to follow you, I'm not content until I know which way you went. That's sad. But the point is, we all die. Psalm 90 continues, for we have been consumed by your anger and by your wrath. We are terrified. You have set all our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. For all our days have passed away in your wrath. We finish our years like a sigh, a vapor. And the days of our lives are 70. Not exact. It is an average. You know, when I first read that, I was a teenager. And I thought, you know, I've got 50 years plus to go to 70. And then the countdown started. I've got 40 years to go to 70. I've got 30. And then you reach 50. I only have 20 years to 70. And then you make 60. I only have 10 years to 70. And I started counting down those years. And I started counting down the months. And I started counting down the weeks. And now I have 19 hours. 19 hours to 70. It's sobering. It's sobering to think about. Because so many of my fellow compatriots in the ministry, if they start and they're still in the ministry full time at 70, the majority of them don't live to 80, or they are in serious health issues, with serious health issues. Because all physical things die. We may not want it. We don't want to think about it, but it happens. And as Moses goes on, and if by reason of strength they are 80, Sheila made it to 82. How few are there past 80? Normally it's the females, especially average in this country, in the United States, who are average age of 80 plus when they die. Men don't make it that far. Yet their boast is only labor and sorrow. The pain that you go through, the agony, the emotional turmoil you go through. And so verse 12, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Don't count down the years. Don't count down the months or the weeks. Count down the days, how quickly they go by. And how many of those days am I going to go by without prayer? Or studying the Word of God? How many of those days am I going to get myself caught up in the rat race of this world? How many of them? Death is a teacher. Teaches us that this life is transitory. Luke chapter 12. Jesus Christ is discussing the spiritual dimension of life. He's discussing the things that really matter. And he is interrupted in his message to the crowd that had gathered by a man whose mind was consumed with the routine of life. Luke 12, verse 13, it says, then one from the crowd said to him, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Why the interruption? My belief is that he was consumed with his rights. Injustice is done him, that he failed to learn and listen to his responsibilities given him by Jesus Christ. So Christ then responds in verse 14, man, who has made me a judge or an arbitrator over you? Christ could have solved the matter. Could have solved the dispute with great wisdom. But he refused to do so. There were courts that could resolve that. You and I probably put ourselves in this position. We want Christ to solve our problems. But too often we don't want to listen to the things that really matter. We don't want to focus on what he has to say. Christ knew the feud that this boy had with his brother was over money. Symptomatic, though, of a greater problem, covetousness. And so in verse 15, it says, so he said to them, take heed and beware of covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of things he possesses. This is the key to the parable that he is about to give. Life is temporary and is not found in things. Verse 16, then he spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. Now notice where his focus is, the farmer. Verse 17, and he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take ease, eat, drink, be merry. And then verse 20, God said to him, did he even hear it? God said to him, fool! This night, your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? Someone else is going to enjoy what you spent a lifetime to gain. In verse 21, so is he who lays up treasures for himself and is not rich toward God. And he follows the parable with a message about worry. Worry is unreasonable. In verse 23, worry is unnatural. Verse 24, worry is unprofitable. Verse 25 and 6, worry is unnecessary. Verse 28, therefore the solution is to stop living for things and start living for God. And he concludes with a parallel of what we are familiar with in Matthew 6. It says it here in Luke 12, 31, seek the kingdom of God and all these things will be added to you. Try to imagine what it'd be like if we were to modernize it, to pay a pastoral call to the widow. The farmer has just died. The farmer in this parable, his wife is in shock. And she asks, what am I to do now? No one told me what would happen next. Her talk wanders. And you try to follow along, just mostly listening. And then you turn to funeral preparations. Again, one of those things, hey, we don't like to think about, but we need to. And you ask a few questions about the husband. You didn't see him that often, so you didn't know him that well. Although on occasion he would show up to church, he was one of those, as I term it, LIFO, L-I-F-O, last in, first out of church. You saw him at the picnic. And boy, when he was at the picnic and we started playing pickup games, be it here in the United States, which is one thing we always have a tendency to do at picnics, play some softball. That guy, when he played some softball, he can hit that ball a country mile, and everybody wanted him on his team. So you ask the wife, what was important to him? Really, what? Widow answers, well, his family. He was proud of his children. He would speak about them often, even though they may not have understood his love. And when we were younger, we would take walks. And he talked about retiring. He talked about it quite a bit, but things just got so busy. And he enjoyed church. He'd come when he came, he'd listen, and he would appreciate the message that was given. And from time to time, he even talked about baptism. That he wanted to indeed get baptism, but he just got so busy. So busy. So you ask, how did he spend his time? Her response, working on the farm. Had a bumper crop this year. And he did not want to sell that crop to flood the market because that would drive down the price of the crop. So he decided, hey, I'm going to break down this barn. I'm going to build bigger ones and I'm going to store this crop and wait for the market to give me a fair price, a profitable price. And once I sell, think about all the money we can have. And then we can retire. And he kept getting busier and busier. And I'd ask him, how much longer, dear? And he'd say, tomorrow. Or he'd say, soon. Or he'd say, this won't last forever. Or he'd say, someday, I promise. And I believe he meant it. And now look. Look at what has happened. It's all gone. He's gone. He's gone. Death is a teacher. And among the things that it can teach is there is a wide gap between our answers to the questions, what's important to us and how we spend our time. How do we spend it? Experiencing the death of a loved one or pondering our own death can provide perspective to our lives and help us see what is truly important and what is not. I believe the farmer when he intended to live a different life someday, just as I believe us when we express some similar intention someday, someday we're really going to stay closer contact with even God someday. We'll be in closer contact with friends. Someday, I'm going to improve my prayer life. Someday, I'm going to get down and study the Bible. Someday, I'll give the family more time. Someday. Someday. When? When the barns are built. When? When the bills are paid. When? When the project is completed. Or the trees are pruned. Or the room is painted. Or the semester is over. Or when the children are gone. Or when I retire. When? When things are different. However, the most important thing in life, the ones we most easily postpone, unfortunately, we don't give the time. We cannot postpone building the barns. We cannot postpone doing the laundry. We cannot postpone running the errands or paying the bills. But Christ says, you need to seek first the kingdom. Death is a teacher. It teaches us that life is transitory. It also teaches us what is important in life. What is important in life? The spirit. The spirit. After the Challenger disaster in 1986, right around the time Herbert Armstrong died, there was an apocryphal piece that was written. It was untrue, but it was an imaginative account of what happened after the Challenger blew up in the sky. It appeared first over in Germany. German news magazine, evangelical news magazine, 5 years after the Challenger disaster in 1981. And this was the scenario after the blow up of what was going on inside of Challenger. Male, what has happened? Oh God, no, no. Female, oh dear God, screams. It's so hot, sobbing. I can't. Don't tell me. God, do it now. Female, don't let me die this way. Not now, not here. Male, your arm. No. Female, I'm blacking out. Male. We're not dead yet. Male. If one could ever, if I could ever wish for a miracle, screams. Male. She is expletive. Male. Not getting air. Male. Female. Screams. Jesus Christ, no. Male. She blacked out. Male. She's lucky. Male. God. The water. We're dead. Screams. Female. Goodbye. Sobbing. I love you. Male, relax. Relax yourselves. Male, it will be exactly like an emergency water landing. Male, right, so think positive. Male, prepare for an emergency water landing. Male, impossible. Male, give me your hand. Male, you are there. Are you awake? I, male, our Father. Male, hallowed be thy name. Male, you over there. Male, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He leads me in green pastures, and though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil. I will dwell in the house of silence. What are the thoughts? What are the thoughts when I know it's only a matter of seconds or minutes before I die? Where is my focus? Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10. The account of Mary and Martha. Luke 10, verse 38 to 42. Luke 10, 38 to 42. Now it happened as they went that he entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she approached him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Who's going to help me with this meal? Therefore, tell her to help me. Jesus said to her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things, but one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen that good part which will not be taken away from her. Martha, listen, you're trying to prepare this elaborate meal. You could send out and order McDonald's or Chefette's. I'm speaking words of life. That's what is important. Mary is seeking it, and I'm not going to take it away from her. Back in the time when we used to practice etiquette in this country, someone asked the late Emily Post, who was one of the etiquette gurus, the question, what is the correct procedure when one is invited to the White House and has a previous engagement? Emily Post answered, an invitation to lunch or dine at the White House is a command and automatically cancels any other engagements. That was the case of the past. Today, an invitation to the White House, forget it. I don't like this man, so I'm not coming. Or if a woman gets, I don't like her, so I'm not coming. Seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness is a daily command. And it automatically takes precedent over everything else. Does it? Does it? The older we become, the more we realize one thing that matters. When we face death, we realize one thing is needed. I still remember coming face to face with death many years ago in Baltimore, Maryland. Three of us were working in the area at the time. And there was one night we decided we were going to go see a baseball game, Baltimore Orioles play. And I was traveling down the road from where we stayed in our apartment. Very busy road in Baltimore, Reisterstown Road. And there is a loop that goes around the city of Baltimore called the Beltway. And there are lights for four directions of traffic. Those exiting the Beltway, coming on to Reisterstown Road. Those continuing straight on Reisterstown Road. Those who are coming north on the Beltway, exiting Reisterstown Road, four-way traffic. I got to the stoplight just as the light was changing from green to red. I was first one there waiting for it to change again. And out of the corner of my eye, I could see commotion. It was a truck, an oil tanker, coming off the beltway going south. There were cars waiting at the light, so he decided to try to negotiate the grassy area to the left of those cars, and then he went only feet in front of me because his brakes were gone. Feet in front of me because he tried to get back on to the entrance ramp to the beltway going south, but he didn't make it. And the tanker flipped over and it exploded. And I just thought, the cars were coming from the south of Reisterstown Road. If they had been in that intersection, and the cars that were waiting to exit the beltway, that could have prevented him from being on that exit road that would have come directly at me. And it's amazing how your life just flashes that quickly. That quickly. And what is the focus? What is the focus? Oh no, God. God. What matters? What matters? I think also of the example of the girl who was in Ambassador College. She was dating a young man from the Caribbean. Parents weren't in favor of it. And yeah, okay, we can get all uptight over it. What are you saying? Why can't she date somebody from the Caribbean? They had to break up if they were going to stay in Ambassador College. And she went in and she talked to a minister. And the minister said, you know, if I had the looks of a movie star, who knows what I would be able to accomplish. And the girl said, Mr. So-and-so, that doesn't matter. Kind of ignoring her response. Who knows if I were rich, who knows what I would be able to accomplish if I were a billionaire? Her response, Mr. So-and-so, that doesn't matter. If I had talent, who knows what I would be able to accomplish? Mr. So-and-so, that doesn't matter. If I had super intelligence, who knows what I would be able to accomplish? Mr. So-and-so, that doesn't matter. Well, what matters? If I don't have the looks, what matters? If I don't have the wealth, what matters? If I don't have the talent or the intelligence, what matters? Seek you first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and these things will be added. That is what matters. Solomon had it all. And he wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. You read the first two chapters of the book of Ecclesiastes. He tried everything. He tried it all. And he came to the conclusion in Ecclesiastes chapter 12. What is the whole matter's conclusion? Fear God, keep his commandments. Or as Paul said in Colossians chapter 3, seek those things which are above. Set your mind on things above, not on the earth. Overlook the insults. They don't matter. Physical challenges. We used to call handicaps physical challenges. They don't matter. Whether I'm sick or I'm well, that doesn't matter. Whether I'm strong or I'm weak, what matters? What is the conclusion of the whole matter? Seek God's kingdom. All the things we worry about, pull out our hairs over, get ulcers over, really don't matter. People get in a huff and puff over things that really don't matter. One of my first counseling sessions in Chicago, of a couple who were arguing over the date of their wedding. I said, this is stupid. You can get the marriage license and find out what the date is. But they were adversarial. What matters? The spirit. Death is a teacher. Teaches us that life is transitory. It teaches us what really matters is the spirit. And it teaches us to set aside our differences to show love. To set aside our differences to show love. At death, people have a tendency to put aside their spats, their feuds, and come together if for no other reason than temporarily to be at the funeral. Families, people in church. I spent a lot of hours in the country of Barbados, a lot of grand memories that I have in Barbados. We parted ways. After my last visit to Barbados, I left Barbados in 1985. We came back for the feast in 1987 and we parted ways. You know the time that I only see some people is at funerals? This past Tuesday, I saw people I hadn't seen in 30 plus years because they came due to death. And I have to give them credit. Paul says, weep with those who weep. That's what Job's three friends did. They came and they sat where he sat because they came to comfort him. And that's what survivors of the deceased need, that comfort. Etienne de Grolier, French Quaker missionary in the United States, said, I expect to pass this way but once. Any good, therefore, that I can do, or any kindness that I can show to any fellow creature, let me do it now. Let me not defer or neglect it, for I shall not pass this way again. That part we know. I will not pass this way again. And that's where 1 Corinthians 13 comes in. In which I need to just substitute the word love with my own name and see how well I am doing. Because death teaches us to love. Death also teaches us to believe. It teaches us to believe. When death comes, we find ourselves a bit adrift on the sea without an anchor. So many in Christianity want to believe. And that pie in the skyism, that the person who died is now up in heaven, looking down on us, that's wishful thinking. That ain't biblical. The example of Lazarus is instructive over in John chapter 11. Lazarus dies. Jesus Christ waited. Christ could have come. Christ could have intervened. Christ could have healed Lazarus, but he let him die because it was an instructive moment. John 11, verse 21, Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. We figure as long as that heart is ticking, there is some hope. But even now I know whatever you ask of God, God will give it you. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day. Jesus said, I am the resurrection. I am the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe? This is what we must anchor our lives to. We know it. Intellectually, we know it. We are called to live a life of faith, not sight. We believe Jesus Christ existed. We believe Jesus Christ rose from the dead. Then we must believe that we too, when we die, we will live again. And those that we have loved, they too will live again. Death teaches us to believe. And it leads to this fifth and final point. Death teaches us to hope. Death teaches us to hope. We're living in a world of hopelessness and despair. past issue of Psychology Today pointing out that the average 30-year-old American is 10 times more likely to be depressed than his father and 20 times more likely to be depressed than his grandfather at the same stage of life. We are surrounded by so much despair. There's a book that dubbed The Time We're Living In is the Age of Anxiety. People who feel unloved. People who are disconnected, and we've got cell phones. And I mean, I get up and I look at people and it's 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning. People are walking around this development. They've got the cell phones. They're connected, but they are disconnected and isolated. Why? Our lives are filled with so much anxiety. So Paul said in 2 Timothy chapter 3, so much anxiety. So we trust no one and we experience this hopelessness and we experience tragedy. Unfortunately, that hopelessness has descended down to our young people who are the same way. Regardless of the gloom and doom we experience in this life, there is hope. Even in death, there is hope. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. What is that hope? We know what the hope is. The resurrection. Death is not the end. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 13. I don't want you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning those who have fallen asleep, lest you sorrow as others who have no hope. Paul isn't discouraging sorrowing. He isn't discouraging grieving. We go through it. That's how we are. That's who we are. I still remember when my father died. And I had a relative who wanted to just walk the streets with me after the funeral. Trying to get me calmed down. Even though I wasn't that close to my father. And it's almost to a point where I have to say to him, don't take my grief away from me. We sorrow. That's part of who we are. But there is a difference with us. We know the truth. And the truth is we have hope. And what is that hope? The resurrection. The resurrection of the dead. As Paul was before the Sanhedrin, talking to the Pharisees and Sadducees in Acts 23, verse 6, men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee, concerning the hope and resurrection of the dead, I am being judged. It is appointed unto men once to die, Hebrews 9. If a man dies, will he live again? John or Job chapter 14. All the days of my appointed time will I wait till my change come. You'll call and I will answer. Marvel not at this, for the hour is coming in which all those who are in the grave will hear his voice. Those who have done good will come to the resurrection of life. Those who have done evil to the resurrection of condemnation. We have the hope. We have that hope. But there is also hope for those who have no hope. We understand that. This idea of going to heaven or roasting forever in hell, we understand that is not biblical. We know the resurrection. We know that those who have not been called by God at this time will come up in that second resurrection. We have an understanding about the last great day that has been revealed to us only by God. The world doesn't understand it. Revelation 20, Ezekiel 37, Valley of the Dry Bones, we understand it. Our friends, our family, our neighbors, everyone who has died or will die will live again. The last great day is their hope. Feast of Trumpets is ours. And because we have that hope, as John says, everyone who has this hope, let him purify himself as he is pure in John. 1 John 3, verse 3. The late David Frost, British TV personality, interviewed several prominent public figures a number of years ago. Frost asked each person, what would you like to have appear on your epitaph? He could have asked, on the night your soul is required of you, what would you want to have said about you? Certainly an incisive question, because it led each person to consider what was most important in life, what they were living for. So consider that question. Keep in mind, when you die, you leave behind all that you have, and you take with you all that you are. Most would respond, oh, I tried to do a little good along the way, and I'd say that is a problem, that we tried. We tried to get along with our mate. We tried to put God first. We tried to pray. We tried to study the Bible. We tried to encourage. If we were to analyze our time and where it is spent, the epitaph would probably read, born a man, died trying to provide for his family. Or born a woman, died trying to keep her closets clean or taking care of the family. Or born a human, died building barns. Let me ask it a different way. If you knew this night your soul would be required of you. You know, this is something. I've thought about this here in the last couple of days, because as Jesus Christ was on his way to Jerusalem, he knew. He knew he was going to die. He knew it. And he is trying to impart something to his disciples. If you knew that this is it, what would you do differently? The point Christ is trying to get across, do it now. Do it now. And I guarantee you the barns are not going to be completely built. But there's the focus on what really matters. And we'll come to the end like Paul in 2 Timothy chapter 4. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6 to 8. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6 to 8, Paul says, I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. I fought the good fight. I finished the race. I have kept the faith. William Barclay, in his commentary, says this: perhaps the world's most famous race is the marathon. Battle of Marathon was one of the decisive battles of the world. In it, the Greeks met the Persians, and if the Persians had conquered, the glory of the Greeks, of the glory of Greece, would never have flowered upon the world. Against fearful odds, the Greeks won the victory. And after the battle, a Greek soldier ran all the way, day and night, to Athens with the news. Straight to the magistrates he ran. Rejoice, he gasped. We have conquered. And even as he delivered his message, he fell dead. He had completed his course and done his work. And there's no finer way for any man to die. Completed the course. I finished the race. I've kept the faith. And so verse 8, he says, finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day. And not to me only, but also to all who love his appearing. So on Paul's epitaph, and what should be on ours: born a mortal, die a child of God. Death is a teacher. It teaches us that life is transitory. It teaches us what really matters in life is the Spirit. It teaches us to love. It teaches us to believe. It teaches us to hope. You know, we come to the conclusion of this message on death, and we will continue next week, but life goes on. You know, it goes on for you, for me. What will be the hallmark of my life? The indication from Paul, I must continue to fight the good fight. I must finish this race. I must keep the faith. And with that life, I will be a beacon to others. And with that life, I will live it the way Jesus Christ wants me to. Because with that life, I will shine a light on what really matters. Because I put God first. And with that life, I will continue to fulfill that covenant I established at baptism, that Jesus Christ is my Lord and Master, my personal Savior, my soon coming King. And as I come to the end of this physical life, I most likely would not have built all the barns I wanted to, but with God's help, I would have kept the faith to the end. Therefore, a crown of righteousness is awaiting me and all who keep the faith to the end by living for the things that really matter. Then we can all meet together again. And that glorious future where I can see people like Sheila Burnett again and to assist Jesus Christ with the great harvest of the millennium and the greater harvest at the white throne judgment and that wonderful time on beyond the new heavens and the earth. So we must keep the faith to the end of this life. I came across a poem earlier this year in preparation for the memorial of David Hall up in Massachusetts. It pertains to something that all of you in the islands are able to do almost on a daily basis. Look out at the ocean. And as you see the ocean, you see the horizon. The poem, though, is entitled, "There's More." We only see a little of the ocean, a few miles distance from the rocky shore. But oh, out there beyond the ice horizon, there's more. There's more. We only see a little of God's loving, a few rich treasures from his mighty store. But oh, out there beyond life's horizon, there's more. There's more. Keep the faith. Because there's more.